Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. And maybe it's not such a good evening. I'm Eric Fisher here, PhilliesNext.com's Blog Talk Radio show, Philly Sports Talk. And I have Gordon Glantz and Josh Landsberg with me, and we are looking at another Eagles defeat. And Gordon, it's probably not just that they lost, but how they lost that makes this so bad. We could probably list about six reasons, but give us two big reasons the Eagles lost today.
Well, I mean, they had been pretty stout against the run, and their whole defense is kind of predicated on stopping the run, and then to put teams in obvious passing downs where you can kind of pin back your ears in that wide nine and get after the quarterback. And that whole thing was just kind of thrown off because there was Redskins with some running backs that most people never heard of. We were able to run the ball, no matter which running back it was, real effectively pretty much the whole game. And that put Kirk Cousins in a real good situation to pick and choose when to throw, because the defense was kept off balance with that. So that's a big reason. The offense was barely on the field. I don't think they had the best offensive game plan, considering the alternative situation they're in now with Lane Johnson out of the lineup. And I do want to mention that, it's one thing I didn't really touch on last week. As bad as this loss hurts, I think last week was still the worst loss. It was a game that they could have and should have won. And think about it, they would have been 4-1 right now with the Redskins 4-2. Yeah, the Redskins would have had a victory over the Eagles, but the Eagles still would have been up, a half game up, with a game in hand. And now you're looking at that it would have been your last game with Lane Johnson at right tackle, your last game with your, top offensive line in there. And it was one last chance to get a victory before you hit what we talked about last week, was a real rough stretch. That last week, as much as this week is frustrating, they were really outplayed pretty much the whole game. They were able to stay in it with smoke and mirrors with the kick return and the interception return. But they were really pretty much beaten in all phases today, with the exception of maybe special teams. So last week kind of factors into this as well, because, you had the rookie starting at right tackle, and I don't think the game plan was really conducive to it's almost like they thought, well, you can plug him right in and we can do everything we did before, and it just doesn't work that way. They probably should have had more help over there, a whole myriad of things they could have done offensively if they had to do over that probably may have helped their offense get on track a little sooner as well, and keep their defense. I think their defense also got a little tired, would have kept their defense off the field as much. They were on the field way too much.
Yeah, let's get to Halapula, Big V, Halapulavati of Vatai in a little bit. But let's stick with the defense since you brought them up. And Josh, Josh Landsberg is with us. Josh, this defense only gave up two touchdowns in the first three games. Now, granted, they played the Browns and the Bears the first 2 weeks. That's still pretty good, though. And they played the Steelers, who obviously are really good, although they lost today. The last 2 weeks, though, first half last week against the Lions, and this week, all of a sudden this team can't tackle. Can you explain what happens to a team that was a defense that was playing so well? And Gordon says they can't get off the field, partly because they're tired because the offense isn't doing anything, but part of the reason they can't get off the field is because they're not stopping the Redskins. Well, so how did this happen? Let me just give you one stat before you start. The Redskins ended this game with the 25th best rushing. They're ranked 25th in rushing in the league, and they rushed for 229 yards. So, again, Josh, how does this happen?
Well, it's a great question. It's completely perplexing to me. That's a great stat. I saw that as well, that the Redskins were not a good rushing team coming into this game, and they just – tore the Eagles apart. I think a big part of it, they did get a lot of rushing yards in the first half as well, but totally decimated them in the second half late in the game when they were up. And that was a big part of that was because Benny Logan was hurt, didn't play the whole second half. And Benny Logan is probably their best run stopper. So not having him in the game, I think, was a huge factor. They weren't able to stop the running game after that. And that's one of the main reasons I would say why the Redskins tore them apart in the rushing game. But It's perplexing why they've been so great against the run and so great overall. They were ranked second and third in defense in terms of the three categories. points, total yards. So they were a really good defense coming into this game, even though they had a bad first half against the Lions last week. They only allowed 3 points in the second half of that game. So it's surprising that this happened, but it's also, I mean, the Redskins have their number. This is now 4 games in a row that the Redskins have beaten the Eagles. So the Redskins have the Eagles number for whatever reason. They're able to beat them. They beat them twice, both times last year and the time before that, the year before. So this is 4 games in a row now where the Eagles have beat, where the Redskins have beaten the Eagles. So, you know, I think it kind of evens out. Maybe we got a little bit overexcited that this defense maybe isn't quite as good as we thought it was, that it does have some weaknesses here and there. Fletcher Cox is a guy, you know, is pointed out to me by some of my friends that's watching the game. They said he plays much better at home than he does on the road. He did not have a particularly good game today, and I could see, you know, kind of what they're talking about there, that he plays much better at home than he does on the road for whatever reason. So Fletcher Cox not playing well, he's one of their best, if not their best defensive players. So him not playing well is a big factor as well. So I think all those things combined is why they did not have a good defensive effort in today's game and why they struggled in the first half of the Lions game as well.
The only time I saw Fletcher Cox today was when he had the roughing the passer penalty. Other than that he was pretty much invisible.
Yeah,
and that was crucial.
Yeah, that was a horrible play. They could have held him to 3 points there if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, Gordon,
I was just about to ask you about that. But, I mean, in defense of Fletcher Cox a little bit here, you know, I question whether he was full strength. He did sit out practices this week, a limited practice with his ankle injury, and maybe he wasn't full. But that doesn't excuse the play you just mentioned, Gordon. The Eagles had them stop there at the end of the half. They would have settled for a field goal, and it would have been a victory for the Eagles to only be down 3 at halftime in this game. But roughing the passer, Gordon, 13 penalties for 114 yards, and I don't think anyone's blaming the referees this week. What's going on there?
Yeah, I don't know. There were 14 penalties last week, and, you know, the referees missed. You know, the big one was that fumble out of bounds thing, which wasn't a penalty per se, you know. But there were a couple bad calls last week, and there were a couple this week that could have gone either way. You know, there was like a block in the back on Smallwood that negated a big gainer at one point. Yep. I'm going to have to replay that a few times to see where the block in the back was. But for the most part, I mean, they earned most of their penalties today. I mean, you know, being partisan with this, that, you know, I thought the Redskins were guilty of a few things that they weren't called for. I thought maybe they were like Brandon Graham was being held most of the game, but you know, yeah, I mean, that's just too many. 13 penalties, 14 penalties. You know, I don't think referees even want to that much. They don't want to throw that much laundry on the field. They you know, because then the attention's called to them. And when you officiate a good game, and no matter what sport it is when nobody talks about you after the game. And I don't think they want to flag a team that many times. But when a team's playing that sloppily, you know, they're left with no choice. And I think it kind of becomes a slippery slope. When you start to play sloppily, maybe they start calling you for some things that are borderline. And maybe that's part of what's going on the last 2 weeks. Maybe a couple of those penalties were sort of, you know, sketchy. But, you know, once you start playing a little sloppy, you kind of set yourselves up for more. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you go back to the Flyers back when they used to get penalized for everything. And sometimes they would get penalized for things that they didn't do. But, you know, you kind of get a reputation and you know, you know, I just think it's something that really needs to be cleaned up. They look like a team. You know, we kind of had 3 weeks of sort of fantasy land, but they now look like a team that has a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback. And you know, it took a couple weeks to get there, but now we're there.
Yeah, and we'll get to the coaching in a second. And I will say on the Smallwood block in the back, I had the radio on, and Merrill Reese said it was away from the play, but it was technically a penalty. And if Merrill's going to admit it's a penalty, that's good enough for me. I didn't see it either, but yeah, if Merrill's going to say it's a penalty, okay, I'm sure it was. Josh, let's the penalties. Let's go to the coaching. And Gordon mentioned it, and you had some issues last week. We've been really high on Doug Peterson's coaching so far. I thought he did a great job. You raised some questions about his play calling last week against the Lions, and I'm going to come to you. Did you have any questions on his play calling? If not, I have a follow-up there. Did you have questions on Peterson's play calling today?
Well, you went right to, you know, we must have been doing the show a few years now, Eric. You went right to where I wanted to go with that. This is the second week in a row now. He had some great play calling the first 3 weeks when they went 3-0. He really had just some creativity around the goal line in the red zone and some really great play calls. I question a bunch of the calls that he made today, though. A couple of the calls, I think, were third and four one time where they ran the ball. I thought they should have thrown the ball. Just a couple of plays where they ran the ball to the right side, which is, you know, formerly Lane Johnson's side. They should have ran the ball to the left side, to all-pro tackle Jason Peters' side. I think that Doug Peterson, Gordon was mentioning, rookie head coach, rookie quarterback, and we're kind of seeing that a little bit now. It didn't come out in the first 3 weeks, but Carson Wentz had his first, you know, he had actually a pretty good game last week and a loss, but he had his first bad game of the season, you know, around a 50-something percentage completion rate, which isn't very good, and he just did not really play well. He had a lot of pressure on him, but I think, you know, having Big V in there instead of Lane Johnson was a big issue. But I think that Doug Peterson could have done a better job. He could have put Brent Celotection type plays to get Big V some help, you know, being a rookie lineman on the right side, to get him some help. I think he could have done that. I think there was a lot of things that Doug Peterson could have done better today, and I think that you have to, you know, blame part of this loss on some of the coaching of Doug Peterson.
Yeah, you know, Peterson was asked about that, and he gave him some more help during the second half. I actually had the opposite. I thought they should have run more than they did, and I thought they were, in the first half, they kept running to the left side, and they were successful, like, on the first two times they did it. And then it seemed like the Redskins knew that the Eagles weren't going to run to the right, to Big V's side. They were always going to run to the Peters, up the middle a little bit, but everything else was either up the middle or to the left. And they started shading that way. I felt they were shading that way and dropping the Eagles for losses because they weren't running to the right. Everything was to the left or up the middle, and I didn't think he played very well. But, Gordon, let's go back. Josh brought it up. Let's go back before the game ever starts to his decision to replace Lane Johnson with Big V. So we don't, you know, disrupt two positions. So we don't have to move Alan Barber over from left guard to right tackle, which means you also have to replace the left guard. Another possibility would have been to put Matt Tobin in there. So, Gordon, I'm going to ask you a two-part. One, I'm going to ask you a three-part, but I'll give you the first two parts first so I don't confuse us, you or me. One, was this the correct decision to put Big V in there? And two, when he was asked about if he considered making a change at halftime, Peterson said no, because it would send the wrong message. So, one, do you think he should start in the first place? And two, should he have replaced him at halftime with Matt Tobin or however they would have done it?
You know, once you make number one, once you do decide to go with him, and we don't know how he's playing a practice. So, you know, and how much he's developed. I saw a guy that looked pretty raw in the preseason, good enough to make the team, but not really good enough to dress for games. That's kind of what I saw in the preseason. And, you know, how he made a rapid development between then and now, not quite sure. But we were being told, you know, he was ready to do it. And, you know, we had no reason not to trust his coaching staff up to this point. They had done a pretty good job. So we kind of took it at their word that he was the next best option. And once you make that call, yeah, it does kind of send the wrong message. You kind of have to roll with it. Maybe you do more things. You mentioned Matt Tobin. And one thing that happened the first 3 weeks, they didn't have all three tight ends at their disposal the first 3 weeks. Either Burton was hurt or Ertz was hurt. They didn't have all three. Seems that now that they have all three, they want to put all three on the field. And you're not getting the same blocking. They were using Matt Tobin a lot, checking in as a tight end eligible. And it was almost more effective that way, and maybe they should have done that more in the second half. I don't think Matt Tobin played at all. If I did, I missed it. You know, check him in as a tight end and let him line up next to and almost have, you know, two right tackles playing next to each other. Maybe you get the effectiveness of one guy. But I think once you make this commitment to Big V, I guess now we can call him middle-sized V, and once it becomes small V, which will be I think you have to go with him another 2-3 weeks and see what happens before you yank him out of there. You kind of have to go with it. I mean, you know, they made the call. It may have been an inaccurate call. There's no way to know, but, you know, I don't know what it says for the other guys. But really, I thought, certainly when they kind of prepared in the preseason for this possibility, they put Barber out at right tackle and they put Wisniewski at left guard and looked pretty effective. And speaking of Wisniewski, I want to throw this in real quick. I mean, this is a guy who started every game in his whole career at center. And it's been a long time since Jason Kelce has really been an effective Pro Bowl caliber center, and I know he's a good interview, and everybody likes him, but I want to put a call out to the beat writers, and I know we have Ed Kratz as a guest on the show a lot, and so is Nick Fierro. You know, when are these guys going to really evaluate that and maybe call out Jason Kelce, and maybe, you know, he gets a lot of untimely penalties, and he gets blown up at the line of scrimmage at some untimely times, and I know Wisniewski's a versatile guy. He can play guard or center. But, you know, he's probably their next best lineman. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. And, you know, they always say get your best five guys and put them out there and find a spot for them. And Barber's a versatile guy. And I think that's ultimately how this is going to end up. But once you made that commitment to Big V, they probably have to kind of hang with it for now, because, you know, there is the issue of the message it sends in what is supposed to be a transitional year anyway. I know we got excited after the 3-0 start, but we were kind of looking at a year where a lot of younger players were going to be on the team. There's a lot of rookies. You know, Jalen Mills is getting a lot of playing time with mixed results, but you don't want to dash the confidence of a lot of these guys. And I guess it's frustrating, but he is trying to see the big picture.
Yeah, you know, Kelce did take a little bit of questioning the first 2 weeks that he wasn't playing well, but then it sort of quieted down. But I think, Gordon, you're right. It's time to revisit that. Josh, I'm going to come to you with the Big V question in a minute, but we have a caller on the line. Caller, would you like to ask a question? Make a comment? No? Okay. All right, well, I'll come back to you after I ask Josh. So, Josh, I was going to ask Gordon the question. You already answered it for me, that he says you got to stick with this 2 or 3 weeks. Well, as Gordon just renamed him middle-sized V or possibly small V, next week they're playing the Big V, the Vikings, who are tied for the NFL lead in sacks. Do you start middle-sized V next week against the Big V Vikings, the 5-0 Vikings, and their defense?
No, I think he was pretty bad. I mean, he allowed 2.5 sacks against them on that right side, and I think that you got to make a change right away. I think you got to – I thought that maybe you shouldn't even have started him in the first place. You know, you don't want to mess with the line too much. I could understand where Doug Peterson is thinking about that, but – at the same time, putting a rookie in there who's kind of raw, as Gordon mentioned, he was raw in the preseason and probably not ready to play right away. He's more of a backup type player. You kind of knew that this Lane Johnson thing was going to hit. Maybe there was a small chance he wouldn't get the suspension, but it was pretty likely he was going to get the 10-game suspension. So they had to be more prepared. And I think moving a guy like Alan Barbary over to the right side to play right lineman and putting in someone else or Matt Tobin in there who has experience. He played last year a little bit for them and, was kind of had some ups and downs. Wasn't great, but wasn't horrible either. I would say average, maybe a little bit above average. So I think some combination of that, either Matt Tobin in there or moving around the line a little bit, I think that that Big V or middle-sized V, as we're calling him now, is just not ready to play that important position on the line. I think he's more of a backup type player.
Yeah, my worry there is, is Carson Wentz. I mean, it's no big deal if, you don't get a lot of yards rushing, but if your quarterback's getting slammed by the, next week against the Vikings, Carson Wentz took a lot of hits today. I don't want to see him against the Vikings taking this many hits again or more. Again, we call it 4448. Do you have a question or comment? Okay. Hey, Gordon, let's look ahead to next week because we're not going to be able to talk until after the game. It is the Vikings, the 5-0 Vikings, who had a bye this week with a quarterback who's familiar to us here, Sam Bradford. What do you expect to see next week from Bradford? It seems tough to talk about right after the Eagles lose this game, but, how do you think the Eagles respond next week against the Vikings and Bradford? Or is that something that, might rile them up and get them back on track?
Yeah, I got a funny feeling. The game's at home. I got a funny feeling that the Eagles will put themselves at least in a position to win that game. The Vikings are 5-0, and but I don't know if anybody's really a 5-0 team in this league, to be honest. How they got there without Adrian Peterson, and that's pretty impressive. And their defense is very impressive as well. And Bradford's done a nice job, Bradford's not very mobile. They need to get after him. They need to have more of a – today they got some pressure here and there, but no sacks at all. They need to, get a lot of pressure on Bradford and do a better job against the run. All the things that they didn't really do today, I think the defense is going to be the key. And they also offensively have to get back to some of the things they did earlier in the season. You know, you have to look at what you were successful at and stick with it. You know, maybe they've gotten a little too cute and clever trying to do new things. And, you know, one of the things they did to get Wentz going early in games was really just a lot of quick, safe passes, you know, out to the receivers in the flat, you know, kind of just set them up to run, you know, whatever they get, 4 yards, 5 yards, you know, get the ball quick to the tight end, you know, flip it out of the backfield to a running back. Even though you may not get a lot of yards on a lot of these plays, you know, you have a chance for him to complete 6 of his first 8 passes, kind of get him in a rhythm early. And they did that in a lot of those games early in the season, and his completion percentage was really high. And, you know, today they just seem kind of out of sync with that. I understand trying to run the ball early and trying to run the ball left early. The Redskins did not come in. I think they were on the worst in the league with yards per carry against them. I think it was up around 7 yards per carry. So I understand that, but you still have to kind of do what you do. You can't worry so much about your opponent that you get away from what you do. And I think, especially with a rookie quarterback, you just have to get the ball. You have to let him kind of, you know, make some safe passes early, make some completions, and he settles down. You know, I think they have to kind of get back to that on offense. I also mentioned, you know, maybe you need to start using guys like Tobin, checking in as assuming Vitae still starts. You know, just lining up there and playing him as a tight end a lot of time during the game, and going to more max protect. The problem with max protect is you're not counting on less people going out in the pattern as receivers and getting open, and with their group of receivers, that's asking a lot, but you might have to try to do it. But, you know, I think they kind of just have to kind of get back to a lot of what they were doing early. And defensively, it might be a little harder because I think they're starting to get exposed a little bit in some weak spots. And that you really can't plan for. But I think offensively, they can kind of get back to what they were doing early and maybe have some success and keep their defense on the sideline, keep their own defense on the sideline by, you know, having some time-consuming drives. They came into today, believe it or not, leading the league, I think, in time of possession, or if not, they were pretty close, and they barely had the ball today. So, that's kind of what they need to do. And I think they could win the game. The crowd will be pumped up, and, you know, you lose two games. The ebb and flow of a season when a team loses two games in a row, you know, and a team's 5-0, nobody's that good, and really not too many teams are that bad. So I think they have a shot next week, believe it or not.
Okay. Josh, how do you feel about next week?
I want to take just I'm kind of on the same lines as Gordon. Actually, I think they have a shot to win the game as well. But just to take a step back real quick about something Gordon said, I know I was kind of the one last week who said it wasn't such a big deal. They lost that game because I thought it was going to motivate them and they were going to come out and beat Washington. And if you would have told me, you know, ahead of time that they were going to lose one game, you know, between Detroit and Washington, they were going to win one and lose one, I would have picked to lose to Detroit and win to Washington, because you always want to win the games within your division more so than outside your division. But knowing obviously now that they go 0-2 in those games, they had an opportunity to win against Detroit, and that was a big loss. So it's a shame there, but it's a tough stretch they have right now. I think this is a winnable game, though. I think if there's any defense that can go up against Sam Bradford, he's been really successful so far early in the season. But the Eagles, as you mentioned, Eric, know him for sure better than anyone. He was with the team, and the Eagles practiced against him and played against him, and they know his strengths and his weaknesses. So I think that him being an immobile quarterback, I think, will really help them. I think they can get after him and get some sacks. And I would not be surprised if the Eagles win this game. I think if the Eagles are going to be a playoff team, this four-game stretch where they have three road division games and one game sandwiched there in between a home game against the Vikings, they got to go 2-2. So now they're 0-1. So that means I don't think they're going to beat the Giants and the Cowboys. I think they're going to lose one of those games. I think they could win one and lose one. So that means they got to beat the Vikings to go 2-2. So it's a really important game. If they go 2-2, they'll be 5-3 at the halfway mark, which would, they go the same the rest of the way, that'll put them at 10-6 and certainly maybe a wild card team or a division winner, depending on how the Cowboys play the rest of the way. So I think this is a very important game for them. It's a winnable game, and it would not surprise me either way if they won or lost it. But I think that Carson Wentz missed some throws today. He had a bunch of open receivers, and I think he's going to look at the tape and play much better next week.
Okay. I'll tell you, just I'm not quite as optimistic as you guys are, and the reason is the Lions ran against the Eagles with their third string running back last week, and the Redskins ranked 25th in the league in rushing. Ran through them with Matt Jones and God knows someone named Rob Kelly, who I'd never heard of, if I'll be honest, until today, who ran broke off like a 45-yard run. And I think teams are figuring out how to run against that Eagles all out, you know, everybody going forward towards the quarterback. I think they're catching them and they're finding the gaps and the holes there and getting behind them, and that's a problem. Gordon, I hate to make the show even more negative, but I do have to ask you this. Did at any point with Ryan Kerrigan blowing past Big V early on and not giving him the extra help, did that remind you of Winston Justice and O.C. Umunyura with Andy Reid?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Eric, I made that comment on Facebook. I don't know if you saw it during the game.
I have not been on Facebook.
Yeah, I usually have a running commentary during the game, and early on I said this is shade. They got to give him help. This is shades of Winston Justice against Michael Strahan. You know, it really reminded me of that. I mean, Kerrigan didn't have the I don't know what Strahan had in that game, 4 or 5 sacks. I mean, Kerrigan, at that time it looked like it was going to be the same type of game. But I think what he did early though was significant. I think it threw the Eagles off. It threw Wentz off. It kept the offense from getting anything established. So even though he didn't end up with 4 or 5 sacks, that impact early, I think, really forced the Eagles' hand to, do some different things, and I think it affected their offense. So, it was very reminiscent of it. And, the thing was, I mean, Winston Justice was a second-round pick. You're talking about V. Fifth-round pick, and some of my draft guides had him as a sixth or a seventh-round pick. So we're talking about a guy who has good size and a lot of positives, but he's raw, and I think we saw that he's raw. And it's not his fault. It's Lane Johnson's fault. Let's not forget that. I mean, they put him in there. Yeah. He's trying his best, but I think they're going to give him a little more leash. And maybe he will improve. I've seen guys thrown into the fire and struggle, and people want them yanked right away, and they do improve. But, it's a situation that bears watching.
Yeah, and the Andy Reid analogy continued after the game, which really upset me to hear Doug Peterson say at least 4 different ways he has to put his players in position to be successful. It has to do a better job. It starts with me. He said like those things together about 10 times, and I was like, oh, no, I don't want to hear that again.
can I get a comment?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I think that sometimes we lose sight of the fact that the NFL season is a very long season, even though it's just 16 games. And think of it this way. If the Eagles started out 0-2 and just won 3 in a row, you'd have a whole different perception on the season. So I think it is a long season. They're going to go through a rough patch with some teams that are clearly superior, but I'm still looking at them 9-7 and finishing probably out of the playoffs because it looks like Dallas is too strong. But it looks like they're building something for the future, and they have some draft picks coming up, and I think this is a good rebuilding year for them.
Hey, this is Bill, right?
Yeah.
Bill? Yeah, Bill, it's a good point about raised expectations. We don't have too much time, but I'm going to ask you right back. So, if this Eagles team we've seen the last 2 weeks, is that, like you said, if they had started out that way, that's what we would have thought. But do you think they're maybe the victim of their raised expectations after their success the first 3 weeks?
Not after today. I think the expectation is they're going to lose to Minnesota, they're going to lose to Dallas, and they're going to have a tough road in those middle games. But then they're going to close out with wins against the Giants and Dallas. I think they can beat them here, and I think they're going to finish with a positive record. As long as Wentz can stay up, they got the tools. Think of the throw we threw to Green Beckham. He's worked with the guy for about a half an hour. He put the ball in a perfect spot. The guy caught it for some 35, 50-yard gain. It was a tremendous play. Gets lost in the shuffle there, but they got some talent that they don't even know they have yet. And I think they're going to really build something for the future here.
Yeah, I do. But I think for this year, I think you make a really good point that if their start, like you said, if they had lost the first 2 and won the next 3, sitting here at 3-2, we'd be happy. But that 3-0 start, especially as good as they looked against the Steelers, I think got some people maybe a little overexcited. We talked about it. I was still hanging out at 8-8 2 weeks ago, so you have it at 9-7, which isn't bad. But this is a really tough stretch, obviously, with the Cowboys. The Vikings coming in, and they go at the Cowboys, a giant. So that's it for our live show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Bill, thank you for the comment. We're going to continue another set of Little Flyers, Little Sixers, and we will talk to you next Sunday. Check out PhillyFanatics.com for the game story and all sorts of good stuff. The Flyers preview. Thank you for listening. All right. Gordon, let me go to Josh. I'm sorry. Josh, Joel Embiid. Let's do Sixers first, then we'll come back to Flyers. The Sixers do start like in a week and a half. I raised this point last week, so let's start with Embiid. He's really played well in very limited time, got a lot of points, a lot of blocks. So let me ask you, what's your assessment of him so far this preseason?
I'm pretty impressed with him. He did have, I believe, 7 turnovers in the last game against the Pistons, but he did have 15 points as well, and he's had games of, I think in the first half of the Washington game, one of the preseason games, he had 11 or 12 points and 11 or 12 rebounds in very limited time just in the first half. So I think that's very exciting. We'll see his endurance level and if he can play a full game as, you know, he's still coming back from the injuries. But it would be really interesting to see if he can play a full game and he can stay healthy. You're talking about a potential 20-10 guy, and those guys don't come around that often. You don't see too many 20-point, 10-rebound average type guys for the season. So I think he can be that type of player. I think he can contribute. He can play multiple positions. You can put him at the 3-4 or the 5 because he can handle the basketball, and he can shoot from the perimeter. He can post up. He can do a lot of different things. What I'm interested to see, and unfortunately the Sixers have had a lot of injuries, is how they're going to work in Julio Okafor and Nerlens Noel into the rotation. Both those guys, it looks like, aren't going to be ready to start the season. Okafor might be ready to start the season, but Noel definitely not. And Jared Bayless, also the guard they got in the offseason, he's not going to be ready to start the season also. So they're not going to have their full lineup until probably a couple weeks into the season. So it will be interesting to see how Embiid plays, you know, on a losing team where they're probably going to lose a bunch of games by 10, 20 points maybe, but hopefully he'll still play well and he'll still look good. And then we'll see how he interacts with the other guys on the team. Will they, you know, will Brett Brown play all three big guys at the same time? That'll be interesting to see. Will he play Okafor, Noel, and Embiid all on the floor at the same time and have Saric come off the bench, something like that? Or will it be just two of those guys and one of the guys comes off the bench and then you have a really strong bench? So we'll see what happens, how Brett Brown is going to work in the different players. That's his job as the head coach. But so far I'm impressed with Embiid. I think he can be a really good player, maybe even a great player in this league. And I think it will also depend on how he meshes with the other guys on the team.
Maybe it's a moot point, Josh. They may never have three big guys healthy at the same time this year because you're right, Noel's. It doesn't look like he's going to be ready for the start of the season, and Okafor's a maybe. Gordon, I tried to be positive, and then Josh comes right up with the 7 turnovers. But, Gordon, our friend Tom Moore noted that Embiid has, I think, 16 turnovers and no assists. Shades of Yinka Dare, maybe, name we don't mention very often here. Who I think famously did. Gordon, were you covering the Sixers then? With Yinka Dare, didn't he go like 58 games without an assist or something crazy like that?
It was pretty bad, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, first I should even ask you, have you watched the Sixers so far this year?
I have not. I've only seen not a lot of the highlights and looked at the box score. So I've seen, I think, every dunk that he's had so far and a couple spot-up jumpers that he's hit. So I'm not seeing a lot of the turnovers. So I'm not seeing the negative aspect of it. But he certainly looks he looks like he's ready to go. I mean, I had questions about, you know, would he be raw, you know, and would he be, you know, how much would he even play? Because people were worried about the three big men, and my feeling was, you know, Embiid, you know, I would kind of bring him along slowly, and who knows how effective he'll be, and blah, blah, blah. Well, I think you can it's pretty safe to say right now he may already be the best of the three. He's just such a tremendous athlete. But like Josh said, you know, we haven't seen him play a lot of minutes yet, so he's only playing like 12, 14 minutes a night. But what he's doing and the athletic ability and the ability to, I think he really picked up that jumper in the 2 years he was out. You know, he didn't have, you know, a lot of time alone in the gym by himself, just shooting jumpers. And that's just another, you know, nice little weapon in his arsenal of something he can do offensively and the way he blocks shots. He's exciting. You know, I just want to caution, you know, we were just like with Carson Wentz and, you know, some of the guys with the Flyers, these guys are all still rookies and they're still learning curves. And, it's natural to get excited and it's fun to get excited, but let's just see what happens. And, you know, I think also this also kind of forces their hand. I think they're really going to have to move one of their big men, and that could be the key move. That could be the key personnel move. You know, one thing about stockpiling draft picks and everything, you know, when you make a trade now, it can't just be giving a guy away. You have to really get equal value in return, or even more than equal value in return. Whoever they decide to move, you know, one or the other, Okafor or Noel, I'd be really interested to see who they get back. And whoever they get back has to be somebody that's part of the nucleus that they plan to build around. So, you know, clearly this is going to force their hand. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see where they go with it.
Well, yeah, and I think I'd like to see them get a starting point guard back, because they still don't have a starting point guard on this team. And
Or shooting guard.
As teams are playing their regulars a little bit more, Embiid, by the way, got up to 20 minutes the other night against the Pistons last night. And they only have one more preseason game left. The Sixers are getting blown out. I mean, they're trailing by 33 points, 25 points in the middle of the game. There's still ways to go to catch up to the other teams in this league. I might have to adjust my prediction. Gordon, before we get to the final thoughts, which we'll start with Josh, I just want to get at least a minute here on the Flyers starting, especially the play of Travis Konechny, who's looked really good and has, I think, 3 assists already in the first 2 games. And you can mention Provorov, too, but just like in a minute until we get the final thoughts. What have your impressions been of the young guys on the Flyers so far?
They don't look like they're 19 years old, I can tell you that. I mean, they weren't that L.A. game. Neither one was shying away from the moment. They jumped right in there and played with a lot of poise. The thing about Konechny, you know, he just plays fast. I mean, he makes decisions fast, and you know, it's one thing to do. We see a lot of hockey players who do things at a medium rate of speed in terms of deciding to shoot or to pass, or, you know, he's going full speed and making those moves and decisions, and that's something you can't really teach. We always talk about things you can't teach no matter what the sport is, and he's exciting. But, you know, I remind you, he's wearing number 11 on the back of his jersey, just like Wentz is, and there's going to be a stretch where he goes 5-6 games with no points, and he may start to press, and that may affect his play. It's a long season, 82 games, and you know, but it does look, he has all the skill that you want, and it's pretty exciting.
Okay.
And
yeah,
I also want to say this, Eric, getting 3 points so far, when we talked about you've talked about the first 3 games on the road and them being shorthanded, I was going to say last week, if they can at least come out of this road trip with 3 points, that would be doing something, and with one game still to go, they already have 3 points. So I think they're off to a pretty good start.
Good point, Gordon. All right, so let's go to final thoughts. Josh, lead us off.
All right, I'm going to go to something that Bill said, one of our most popular callers, and disagree with him a little bit. He said that this is a rebuilding year, and he would be happy with the Eagles going 9-7. But I think expectations were raised when they started 3-0. Expectations have kind of come down a little bit with the last 2 losses. But you don't see trades too often in the NFL. But I look at a team like the Chicago Bears, who's a non-contender. They're not going to make the playoffs this year. And they need to, you know, really improve through the draft and get better. And I think that if the Eagles can make a trade and get a player like Alshon Jeffries, a great wide receiver, he's not a prima donna. He would fit in really well, I think, with this Eagles team. You look at a team that all of a sudden could go from a 9-7 team to maybe a 10-6 or 11-5 team. I think you give Carson Wentz another weapon, a wide receiver weapon. I think wide receiver is the weakest position by far on this Eagles team. You could look at it on the other side, just to play devil's advocate kind of with myself, you know, kind of see what happens this year. And the wide receiver class is pretty big class coming in the draft class, so they could get a wide receiver in the draft. Well, also a lot of good cornerbacks in the draft, so they could build for next year and years going forward. But I want to try to capitalize now. I know they have a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach, but if they could get a player like Alshon Jeffries and this defense can get back to what they were doing the first few weeks, I think this could be a really special team, and I think only teams like maybe Minnesota and Dallas are really ahead of them. Green Bay has had their struggles on offense. They don't look like a powerhouse anymore. So I think the Eagles would be right there in the mix of the top three or four teams, you know, maybe with Seattle in there as well, as top three or four teams in the NFC if they get a player like Alshon Jeffery. So I think they should make that move if they can, and I would even give up a first or second round draft pick to get a guy like Alshon Jeffery.
Ooh, that's a big price, but I hear you, Josh. They should say that the Packers did just score. The Cowboys are leading them. If you're listening to our Cowboys, you're in a score, but it's 27-15, although the Green Bay's going for the extra points here. Gordon, your final thought?
Maybe the Bears would take Jason Kelce for Alshon Jeffery, and then we could just start Wisniewski and everything would be set. But it's clear what the Eagles need. I think we can see it. Corner, I mean, I would draft two corners and maybe sign one or free agency. I think it's that desperate a corner, you know, bringing three new corners, and you have Jalen Mills be your fourth corner, and that's kind of where you are. I mean, these Brooks and Norlin Carroll and McKelvin can't even stay healthy. I think it's pretty obvious, and I like to add a receiver, whether it's a veteran. There was some talk this week about DeSean Jackson. I don't know about that, but I wouldn't mind seeing him finish his career here. That aside, I mean, let's go back to rookies real quick. You know, there's a lot of excitement. We talked about Embiid, and we talked about who's technically not a rookie, I suppose. We talked about Konechny. But it's two foreign guys that I'm really still most excited about, and that's Saric. You know, I think especially, you know, in Ben Simmons' absence, I think he's still going to be a key guy for the Sixers this year. And he has, you know, more playing time really under his belt than Embiid has. And Ivan Provorov, you know, he had an assist the first night, and I just think he's a strong guy, and I've been really impressed with the way he's played so far. And I think in the long haul, these might be the two rookies, if we're talking again a few months from now, that we're talking more about. So that's a final thought on that. One quick thing on baseball. I admit I'm not following that closely. I don't quite get – I do get it a little bit with Utley and Ruiz and cheering for the Dodgers, but I go back to those bitter playoff series against the Dodgers in the 70s, and we were able to even the score a little bit in 1983 with Sarge Matthews had that great series. But I don't care if I have, you know, a relative playing for them. I can't go that far, but you know, I wish them the best in a certain sense, but in another sense, I'm just not one of those guys who cheers for people who leave here. I remember wanting Reggie White to pretty much, you know, break his leg in the Super Bowl, so that's just the kind of guy I am when it comes to guys who leave. So, I just want to throw that in.
You're a bad guy, Gordon.
Yeah, I know. You already know that.
I want to point out that I correctly predicted the score of today's Eagles-Redskins game, 27-20. There was a typo, though, where I got the teams backwards, but I did have, you know, so I think that was just a typo. otherwise, I had it right in the money. It's a little sad story, and we're going to move away from Philadelphia sports for this, and that is, I went through two things in here. One, Dennis Byrd died in a car accident, and for those who don't remember Dennis Byrd was played for, I think it was with the Jets at the time. Was basically paralyzed on the field, and he carted off and told him he'd never walk again, and he was able to get back and walk again, you know, and lead a normal life pretty remarkably. And really sad to see somebody who got through that die prematurely in a car accident at age 50. Another thing, we're looking week to week, but I want to look down the road a little bit in my column this week. I wrote about the Flyers. We covered the Flyers in our preview and our five things to go right or wrong, and I'm going to mention Sean Couturier got off to a good start, which is one of the things I mentioned could go right or wrong. But, you know, this is a big transition year. The Snyder family's been bought out by Comcast, and we now have a, you know, real corporate ownership without that front guy like Ed Snyder. And I think in the short term they're going to be fine with Paul Holmgren as team president, Ron Hextall as the general manager, two guys, you know, Flyers through and through. But, you know, there's part of me that worries that the Flyers down the road will no longer be the model and special franchise that they've been. I know they haven't won a Stanley Cup in 40 years, but they've a place that treats the players first class and treats the fans first class. It's a place that people like to play. I just wonder if they're going to lose something special now that without the family involvement, the Snyder family involvement. And we'll see what happens down there down the road. So that's on PhillyFanatics.com. The Eagles game story will be up as soon as we're off the show here. So please check it out. for Gordon Glantz, Josh Landsberg, and a thank you for Bill for your insights on the call. I am Eric Fisher. We will talk to you next week after the Eagles-Vikings game. Have a great week.